Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. You know, I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
It's Tuesday, September 13th, and here it comes. Here it is, the first pickups pod of the season. Joining me all season long, the wizard of the waiver wire, Andy Behrens. Andy, congratulations on a well-earned water polo victory for your Chicago Bears. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, the Bears are back, definitively, clearly back. It looks like a two-team race in the division. It's the Vikings, the Bears. You can forget the Packers. These are exciting times.
Yeah, thank God we're getting this in, you know, just about a week before Aaron Rodgers drops like a 50-burger on the Bears in a primetime game.
Andy, the Christian Watson breakout game, the Sammy Watkins, delayed by a week breakout game. Sure, it could happen.
Alan Lazard will come back and catch 13 balls for 80 yards and 2 touchdowns. It'll be really exciting, man. It's going to be a great time. But anyways, we've got a lot of serious business to get down to today. Andy is the GOAT at the waiver wire, which, thank God, I can't wait to dive into all of his picks there and hopefully add all these guys to my team. But before we do give our favorite waiver wire pickups of the week, we got to talk a little bit about what happened last night. And a lot of stuff happened. It's funny, you know, on the recap pod with Scott, I said, oh man, you know, like we're not going to recap this game, you know, so hopefully no breaking news happens. Well, a lot of stuff came out of that Sunday night game. Buccaneers 19, Cowboys 3. We can start nowhere else other than the Cowboys side of things. Pretty tough to script a more troubling start to your 2022 season than what the Cowboys offered up on Sunday Night Football. Obviously, the offense was just a disaster all night long. Then Dak leaves with the hand injury. He's had surgery today. He's going to miss multiple weeks. Mike McCarthy also says that Connor McGovern, their offensive lineman, is not going to go after a high ankle sprain. You know, veteran Jason Peters is still ramping up, so a bad unit already got worse. I mean, like I said, tough to come up with a worse start, Andy.
It really is. And, there was a path there. If Dak would have just remained healthy, for them to finish with sort of a, I don't know, this game could have ended like 19-13, 19-10, kind of yes. An honorable loss. Maybe they visit the red zone eventually, which ultimately did not happen in this game. And you could have looked at it and said, okay, their defense did well when the Bucs were in the red zone and Parsons is still a game wrecker and Zeke looked pretty frisky. And maybe I can squint a little and build a case for the Cowboys to be a competitive team that makes a playoff. Like, all of that is out the window now. There's no way they're getting through as many as 8 weeks without Dak Prescott. I mean, this is going to be a wasteland in a hurry. I don't know what you do at the quarterback position when you don't have a guy behind him that you feel really good about, right? Because it's not really a plug and play position as much as we like to, you know, I've heard speculation today about, yeah, is it going to be, or do they make a move for Garoppolo? Do they make a move for Teddy Bridgewater? They make it like everybody's looking at all the backups around the league, but it's just not that simple to plug a guy in when they haven't been in your camp and they like they haven't been in your system. I don't know. What are you going to do? Go get Andy Dalton? Like, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. There's no quick fix for this. And the rest of the division looked really good. So right. It seems terrible in the second week of the season to say a team's really got to start looking at young players and maybe they've got to consider draft position. I don't know. I don't know what to tell a Cowboys fan today other than to hope that Dak can somehow beat this estimated return time by a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty bleak. I mean, Cooper Rush and Will Greer, the other quarterbacks on the roster, and they cut these guys. Like, yep. I mean, I obviously they brought them back on, you know, to into the fold and all that, Cooper Rush on the active roster. But like that's what they thought of these guys. And it's just like it's emblematic of the Cowboys in general that they left themselves vulnerable at positions where and now injuries have struck at all three of those positions. Backup quarterback. Like, it is kind of stunning that they have let the backup quarterback position go to waste on this team when they've already been in this spot with Dak Prescott before. Yes. You know, obviously the like that's insane. Tyron Smith, it was like kind of a lock that he was going to miss at least a little bit of time. Now he's missing a ton of time, and their offensive line was a disaster last night as well. I mean, there was nothing good going on there. And wide receiver, man, I mean, we can talk about what to do with CeeDee Lamb. And I know it's already a topic of conversation. Oh, CeeDee Lamb's overrated. You know, he shouldn't have never been ranked this high. He gets 11 targets, catches two balls. Dude, it doesn't even matter if CeeDee Lamb is legitimately a number one wide receiver when the rest of these guys are like, they're legitimately like wide receiver 4 and 5 types. I mean, it was stunning at one point when Mike Tirico goes, oh, Semi Fajoko's down there somewhere. It's like, Semi for what the fuck? Like, what are we talking about here? I mean, you know, I'm embarrassed that the Cowboys would run out. You know, I don't care about the Cowboys one way or another, but I'm embarrassed that they would run out like literally an unserious wide receiver core. Cause
right.
I get it. Like I get it that yes, we knew that Michael Gallup was going to miss time. We know that, you know, James Washington got hurt. And Jalen Tolbert apparently is not ready to play. He was a healthy scratch last night. Like, that's a guy you can go ahead and drop, spoiler alert. But your plans shouldn't fall apart when, you know, freaking James Washington misses time and, like, a third-round rookie's not ready to go.
I feel like we even talked about this at one point where, like, you know, if your entire season depends on James Washington staying healthy, like, maybe things are a little bit too thin. Maybe he should not be like the one card that falls and then the entire house comes tumbling down. Yeah, it's I have no way to give hope to Cowboys fans. Not that they came to this podcast necessarily. I feel like people aren't coming to this podcast looking for hope necessarily, but who knows? It's a waiver wire pod, so maybe. But I can't do it with the Cowboys. Part of it is just that there's nothing that we saw before Dak was injured that made me feel good about this team. Again, they're playing a good defense. They're playing a championship caliber team and all that, but they literally didn't visit the red zone before Dak was injured. And now it might be weeks before they visit the red zone unless their own defense gets them there.
And I mean, Zeke actually looked pretty good. You were right to point that out, but, and he's probably somebody you're going to have to hate start at the running back position. Cause just, it is what it is. Pollard though, there was no like special role for him, anything like that. And I mean, for CeeDee Lamb too, the defense is just squatting on the short and intermediate stuff. Like any sort of outbreak, like he had 1.9 yards of separation last night, which is not a CeeDee Lamb problem. That's like they know where the ball's going. They can squat on that intermediate zone because they know you don't really have time to get downfield. And my God, you're getting downfield to guys like that undrafted free agent whose name I've already forgotten, and like Noah Brown and Semi Fajoko or whatever. So offense.
There were a couple of balls to Lamb where initially my thought was, oh man, he's got to come down with that. But even if he comes down with it, there's three defensive players in the frame. They've got him like triangulated, and he's not gaining an inch after making that catch. And he wasn't very far downfield to begin with. So like that was going nowhere. It would have been, you know, a free PPR point, I guess, but like not particularly helpful within the actual context of the game. And now it just gets worse from here.
Yeah, it gets worse from here. And I mean, if you have him, you're holding him, and it sucks that you drafted him this high, but this is what happens when a starting quarterback.
I do
goes
think
down.
Like there's a conversation to be had about like do I really want to play Dalton Schultz? And does Dalton Schultz have he's not gonna have any trade value without Dak. So like
no.
I've sort of been thinking that CeeDee Lamb is like the one piece of this receiving core that you hold, and like, I don't know, maybe Dalton Schultz still gets peppered with targets because everybody else here is so bad. But that's all you're hoping for is sort of an empty calories, you know, 6-catch game from Dalton Schultz, which is not usually what we're looking for at tight end at all. Right. We're just looking for the guys who can fall into the end zone. So I can't really make much of a case for anyone here other than Lamb as a fantasy start, other than Lamb and Zeke.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a chance we get to a couple weeks from now and like Dalton Schultz is a guy we're considering dropping just because, you know, and it's tough because he went pretty high in drafts again. But it's just not a lot of touchdown equity in this offense. And he's not already a guy that was mostly reliant on volume anyways. And now that is going to be really, really, really ugly volume. So we'll see, man. That's a depressing conversation. The other side of the ball with the Bucks, you know, Chris Godwin returns. I really wish they had just not done this with Chris Godwin, because the problem is not that he's going to return in a lesser form or he's going to tear his ACL again or something like that, but he's going to have complicating injuries and stuff like that. And he gets a hamstring injury coming out of this one. Todd Bowles seems a little more enthusiastic about it, but that was kind of a bummer to see, because he looked pretty good, but it was a bummer to see him go out like that. Mike Evans missed a few plays here and there. Julio Jones, I mean, looked pretty good. What I really like about this Bucs offense, every single one of their top four receivers, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Russell Gage, Julio Jones, they all ran at least 35%+ of their routes from the slot. So like, they get these guys advantageous looks. I think that's key for Jones moving forward. But really, the star of the show was Leonard Fournette. Like, I'm not willing to cast a lot of judgment on these Bucs receivers until they're all out there and a little more integrated with their long vacation quarterback. But man, Leonard Fournette certainly looked awesome.
Yeah, Fournette looked great. He did not get, you know, and my dog going crazy for Leonard Fournette talk. Huge Lenny guy. Fournette did not get, and this is game flow related, I almost assuredly, but he did not get any sort of significant target total here, right? Like, last year we were getting accustomed to him seeing 7 to 9 targets a game for a little while there, and then But you're not going to complain when a running back goes over 130 total yards, has a dominant game, is just physically bigger and better than anybody on the other side of the ball. So Fournette obviously looked great. I will also say, and this is, you know, I think we're going to mention him later, but Rashad White pretty clearly had the number two role. There's no role for any other running back there. And that's just a little thing to file away. Like, it seemed pretty clear to me that Rashad White is the unrivaled number two. So anything happens to Fournette, he's the guy that you want.
100%. We'll talk about Rashad White a little more later. Last note on Fournette, man. I mean, you're right. He looked bigger. He looked better. He looked great on Sunday night. And this is a Cowboys defense that we did respect coming into the year. And oh man, Micah Parsons, you're right. It sucks that guy's like potential defensive player of the year season is going to get wasted on like a Cooper Rush offense or whatever. but man, he's a good player. But Fournette, like, dude, Fournette is good. Like, this whole notion that he's just like, people still think he sucks. Like, I feel like there's still that narrative out there in fantasy football that he's just a volume guy. He's just this, that. Like, man, Fournette's a pretty good player, man. He's made a good bit out of his career here. And I feel like he deserves a little more respect from some of the haters out there.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's somehow guys get tagged with, I don't know, they can't get the stink of Jacksonville off of them. I don't know what the situation is. It's probably a little bit that.
He's fantastic. He was a little overhyped as a prospect, right? Like, he went fourth overall. There was he's the next Adrian Peterson type stuff. And he got freaking cut by the team that took him fourth overall. So there's probably, I think that's sort of the narrative that sticks on him. But he's definitely an above replacement level running back. And I think he's a good starting back. I think we can agree on that. That was a depressing. That was after a long, fun Sunday night or Sunday of football, that night game was, even before Dak's injury, it was depressing. It was
that matchup had been the regular season game of the year in 2021. Right. So I don't know why I talked myself into the idea that of course they were going to run it back and it was going to look just the same as they literally gave us 60 points and almost 900 total yards the year before. And it was just such an ugly game for so many reasons.
Oh my God. All right, let's move on. Let's move to the waiver wire pickups of the week. We're going to go section just position by position here, although we have some special segments later on to get to. Let's start off with quarterback here, Andy. How do you want to do this? You want to go guy by guy? You want me to read off all the guys and you pick and choose? I mean, pretty much, like, I'm going to just let you kind of drive the bus here, but
I'll try to prioritize these guys, I think, is what I'll do, which is not something that we spent a ton of time with last year, but I'll try to actually sequence these guys. I feel like quarterback is probably the place to start. You just lost Dak. That is a pressing problem. And I don't have, like, you know, if you're in an 8-person league, a 10-person league, and you can actually find like a Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins out there, fine, great, go do it. Most of us can't. Like, most people who just lost Dak are probably going to have to stream their way through the next 7 or 8 weeks, which is messy. And you've got to start looking at, like, you know, 2-3 weeks ahead. You've got to plot out like a little plan with your streaming options. Oh, I think, like, these are all going to be sketchy names that we talk about here. But again, on this pod, in the pickups column, I'm just looking at guys who are available in at least 50% of Yahoo leagues. And it would be, you know, you can always cherry pick and find some guys who are like 70% rostered and you'll feel a lot better about the names, but then you're not really helping anybody. So I want to start with this potentially terrible name, and that's Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan did not put on a clinic in his season opening tie to the Houston Texans. Didn't see that coming. He did throw 50 passes, which is how he got to 352 yards. I'll tell you what he has going for him is he's the guy who gets to throw to Michael Pittman, who looked awesome and was awesome. He's also the guy who gets to face the Jacksonville defense that just gave up 4 passing scores to Carson Wentz, right? So the matchup ahead looks really good. It's not that we've never seen Matt Ryan, you know, stumble in a favorable matchup, but he's got a great matchup coming up with the Jaguars. Then the week after that, it's Kansas City, which you can at least hope is a shootout of a game in which he has to again throw 50 passes. And it might not be, you know, a totally clean game, but on volume alone, I think Matt Ryan can be really good for the next couple of weeks. Other guys that obviously popped, I mentioned Carson Wentz, and he's got Detroit coming up. Carson is just one of those guys where we're going to talk about his receivers in a second, because his receivers were fantastic and I think are actually some of the ads of the week. But, you know, he's the guy who gets to throw to McLaurin and Curtis Samuel and Jahan Dotson. And that seemed like a pretty good way to make a living. It's never going to be a clinic with Carson Wentz. There's always going to be like 4 throws where you're like, how can you do that, man? You've been in the league for how long? And they happened to not burn him against the Jaguars. At least they didn't result in a loss against the Jaguars. But against Detroit with these receivers, the fantasy total could be there at the end of the day. I think that Jameis Winston is probably not somebody that you're going to want to start against Tampa next week, but he's got Carolina the week following that. And Jameis has been, you know, kind of a party in New Orleans over the last, like his 8 starts for the Saints. He has 16 touchdown passes and only 3 picks. And that is not the Jameis that we had grown accustomed to, obviously, in the Tampa years. He's still a guy who looks downfield constantly. There's a conversation to be had there about what that means for like Alvin Kamara's fantasy value moving forward, right? Because Jameis, there's no Drew Brees in his game. There's none of this, you know. Kamara used to be a guy who was completely immune to game flow. It didn't matter. You fell behind, that's where Brees was going to go with the football through the air. Now, that seems not to be the case. Like Kamara was not particularly heavily targeted in the comeback against Atlanta. Jarvis Landry was. Michael Thomas was. Thomas looked great. Landry looked great. Like, this is a really good receiving core. So, again, I might steer clear of him against the Bucs, but I would play him the next week against Carolina. And the final name we probably have to mention here, another kind of icky name, another blast from the past, is Marcus Mariota, who rushed for 72 yards. And that's probably all I have to say. He gets to throw to Pitts. He gets to throw to Drake London. And he just ran for 72 yards.
Yeah, a lot of interesting names here. I agree with that. All these guys are potential streamers this week. And, you know, we'll talk more Wentz when we talk to receivers, because they're kind of the more interesting part of this. And Matt Ryan, like, by the way, his game looks a lot better if there weren't a couple of drop touchdowns literally in the end zone. One pretty rough one by Alec Pierce, the rookie receiver, who I like. But so Matt Ryan's day against the Texans could have looked a lot better than it ended up looking like. So just keep that in mind. I mean, then they run that stupid, I'm still annoyed at that stupid fourth down play where they had like Nyheim Hines and Jonathan Taylor in the Wildcat. I get the thought, but come on. I do think that Jameis Winston, while he might not be the guy that you want to start against Tampa, maybe, although at least the Saints are running out a professional offense, not like an XFL offense like the damn Cowboys. I think that Jameis could actually be the one that maybe gives you the most long-term juice. So like, if you are a Dak Prescott, you know, you had him on your team, maybe you prioritize Jameis in what should be a high-scoring game, because I don't know, man, that Saints offense, like, I know it took them a minute to get going, but they look good. They look really good. I mean, Landry gave him something that they didn't have. And Chris Olave, like, he still ran the second most routes on the team, and he was pretty spicy as a vertical receiver.
Yeah, I will say, if you didn't want to stream like absolutely every week and spend the, you know, the next few months just pouring over the waiver wire and you just wanted a guy, I think Jameis is probably the best bet here to be the highest scorer over the next 6 to 8 weeks, which maybe that's all you want, replacing Dak Prescott.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that he's kind of the longest term guy. All right, let's move into running back. I think maybe we go guy by guy on this one just because quarterback's like, yeah, good. All those guys are probably fine. First off, starting with, I'm going to pretend that the way you have them here is in priority because I think this actually kind of makes sense this way.
Yeah.
Jeff Wilson for the 49ers. We know Elijah Mitchell sprained MCL. He's expected to miss 2 months. Good God. Sorry that you and Tank both have to take the L to me on our FFL props because somebody went over on Rashad Bateman. You two losers were wrong. But you were wrong kind of by circumstance, because Elijah Mitchell was definitely going to crush that. What was it, 59.5 total that you had on NFL?
He was without question going to go off. He had 41 yeah. rushing yards in a minute on six carries. Was clearly, if not the centerpiece of the offense necessarily, he was going to be a featured player for the Niners. He looked great. Everything was going well. I only needed him to reach 59.5 yards, and I had put that in a handful of parlays too, but whatever. Those are the parlays are for rubes like me. You probably shouldn't do it. No one should do it. But I can't
well,
stay
fine.
Away.
So Tank is the one who's wrong, which makes sense. You know,
I mean, he was just going to have a monster day. This is going to be like last year. It was going to be 130 plus rushing yards. He looked really good. It's a terrible situation for Mitchell. It's murky for Wilson. Like, I feel like Jeff Wilson probably has to be the priority at the position. It's close for me with the next guy that we'll talk about. He didn't have a particularly great game, but like we can excuse almost anything when you're playing in a monsoon, right? And we've certainly seen Jeff Wilson. You only have to go back a couple years to Jeff Wilson having a whole bunch of weeks in which he really spiked, like a 10 touchdown season back in 2020. He's a good player. The team loves him. The coaching staff loves him. They're clearly going to lean on him, but they're also clearly going to put Deebo Samuel in the backfield again,
right.
Which they did against the Bears. And there's going to be 10 to 15 designed runs for Trey Lance for I think some of the, you know, not that this is necessarily the subject for a waiver wire discussion, but I think some of the reaction to Trey Lance's struggles was, I don't know, I didn't think Trey Lance was that bad. I thought he was pretty dangerous.
It's totally confirmation bias, Andy. I think I think it's fair that we can call it that. I mean,
and it was it was an absolute monsoon too.
Yeah, Trent Williams said after the game. Like, it just so happened that when we needed to throw the ball, like, it was raining harder. And if you watch that game from start to finish, and because I hate myself, I guess I'd had that on one of the primary TVs, because I mean, I want to see what Trey Lance Justin Fields look like. And it was pretty uncanny that whenever the Bears needed to throw the ball, the rain stopped. And credit to Fields. I mean, he played pretty well in those circumstances, and his mobility opened up a few coverage busts in the 49ers secondary. But whenever they needed to throw the ball, it was like, then the rain starts going again when the 49ers. Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with you, though. I do agree with your point overall.
Yeah. So I don't think Trey Lance is like losing his job anytime soon, certainly not off of that game. So there's just going to be a lot of rush attempts that go to other guys. So I don't you can't imagine Jeff Wilson stepping into exactly the role that Elijah Mitchell's going to have. Right. He's probably not going to have a lot of games in which he gets 20 carries, 25 carries, anything like that. But 14, 15, that's going to happen. It's going to be a Shanahan offense. It's going to be a team that is dedicated to running the football. So there's a lot to like here. And again, we probably get him for 6-8 weeks, as a featured guy.
Yeah. I'm not going to go. How would you rank him like in your weekly rankings before this? Like probably high, I would say low end two, high end three for Jeff Wilson.
Yeah. He's probably, I haven't gone through the week two ranks yet, but he's probably going to fall in the mid 20s somewhere, kind of that flex line. It's Seattle. Coming up next week, and I still want to know what Seattle looks like exactly. That could be great. Like we're recording this before Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams do whatever it is that they're going to do against Seattle. That could tip it for me one way or another. I could end up thinking that 15 carries against Seattle is pretty friendly, and I want that. So that might, you know, that might boost him to the RB20 range. But I don't think there's a huge receiving role here, and I don't think that there's 20 or 25 touches in the cards for Wilson. So that's going to press him down a little bit.
That is my guess as well. Next up, you've got Khalil Herbert. I mean, David Montgomery crushed in your usage league in week one.
Yeah.
But Khalil Herbert actually looked like the much better running back.
Yeah, this for me is actually really close. Like Herbert is somebody who's actually rostered, I think, in over 40% of Yahoo League. So he's not as widely available as Wilson. it's really close for me with Wilson, though. Like, I think what Herbert did is a reflection of what we might see in terms of usage moving forward. Like, obviously, Montgomery outsnapped Herbert, outtouched Herbert by a pretty significant margin. But at the goal line, like on the game deciding possession, it was all Khalil Herbert. That was a lot of confidence in this player. So that's not, yeah. And Montgomery wasn't, to the best of my knowledge, there was no Montgomery injury that we were worried about. He was pretty ineffective. Again, you can excuse a lot on a day like this, but Herbert looked great. He looked great last season. Yeah, remember that 4-game stretch when he replaced Montgomery last year when Montgomery was out. Herbert was fantastic, almost 400 total yards, about 4.5 per carry, you know, had a big day against Tampa of all teams, and nobody could run against Tampa. So Herbert's for real. And, you know, I feel like his workload was, even if it was just a third of what Montgomery saw, I feel like that's going to climb. And he just earned a lot of credit with that coaching staff after that game.
Yep, and that's just a story to continue to monitor throughout the year because he can absolutely just win that job. So I agree with him being on this list. Next up here, Jaylen Warren. This is an interesting one because I think he's going to be somebody, Andy, that folks are like tempted to empty the clip for with Jaylen Warren because he's maybe in that Alexander Mattison of like a guy that, okay, the starter's out. We know Najee Harris is dealing with a foot injury. There's some speculation that it is the same foot as the Liz Frank injury, but it's not the Liz Frank. I don't know. Who knows with Najee Harris? He left last game with in a walking boot. So Jaylen Warren, though, is the RB2 there, but how secure is that RB2 role? Like, do you expect him to just get dropped into the every down role that Najee Harris has, that pretty much, by the way, every Steelers running back is, but at least the good ones? Like, how, I guess that's the question. How good is Jaylen Warren?
Yeah, he's clearly the immediate backup to Najee Harris, and basically didn't come off the field after Harris left. You and I are talking about the Harris injury at a moment when we don't have a firm timeline on it. Initially, it looked like every high ankle sprain I've ever seen, but it's obviously the same leg in which he injured the foot. He's got a little bit of a history of foot injuries. If it's an aggravation of the Liz Frank injury, that's not great. It didn't sound like it was the worst case scenario after the game. But it presumably this is still has the potential to be a multi-week thing. Warren's got the headwinds of, you know, bad O-line, probably poor quarterback play behind Mitch Trubisky, right? Like, it's never a clinic with Mitch. He didn't give the ball away against Cincinnati. That was nice. I'm not sure anybody should have expected much better from Mitch, all things considered. Again, it's not a great offensive line. Is Warren the kind of player that can actually overcome that? He was a fun runner at the college level, a 1,200 yard guy at Oklahoma State. He was good in every big game, right? Over 100 total yards against Notre Dame. He was good against Oklahoma. I almost never know what to do with Big 12 defenses because it's not the same quality yeah. of play for the most part. But he's a really good college
Who among us hasn't overrated a Big 12 receiver because of the defenses played in that conference?
Exactly. But he is a guy who's going to step into a pretty significant workload for however many games Najee Harris can't go. I will understand if people throw down an aggressive bid for him. It's just not going to be me. I don't feel like this is a empty the wallet situation. I don't feel that way with Jeff Wilson or Khalil Herbert either. I'd be pretty aggressive with those guys. I'd be a little bit more aggressive than I am with Warren. That could burn me, but I don't like the overall scenario in Pittsburgh, and that O-line did not look great.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Like, a first-round player like Najee Harris could overcome some of the clear pitfalls there because of the volume that he gets.
I've seen Najee Harris referred to like as a bit of a compiler, and he's just a guy who did it on workload. Like, that guy actually led all running backs when you combine receptions with rush attempts. He led all running backs in missed tackles forced last year, and I wasn't that close either. He's good. Like, he's one of those guys who had a bunch of, you know, maybe it's a carry that goes for 2 yards, but he made two guys miss along the way, and it could have been a 4-yard loss, right? Like, there was a lot of that to Harris's game last year, and it is not clear to me at all that Warren is that guy.
Nope, not Cleary at all. But I do think he definitely is a guy that should be added and probably was a player that should have been drafted, like just on the off chance that this happens, especially because Najee Harris was already dealing with an injury coming into it. These next two guys, I'm going to group them together. Kenyon Drake, Rex Burkhead, the dusty veterans of the group. I mean, Rex Burkhead is probably the more interesting one to talk about because he crushed all the Damian Pierce hopes and dreams in week one. I mean, 19 touches, 71% of the snaps for Rex Burkhead. That was aggressive. Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, it, you know, and we all knew that Rex Burkhead was going to have a role, but he had most of the role, right? He had like three quarters of the role, and it really made Damian Pierce almost a guy that you have to sit until further notice, yeah. Right? Like it was, I get why everybody was excited about him. He looked great in the preseason, fun story, but Rex Burkhead just absolutely dominated in a game that should have set up for, like, if Damian Pierce was really going to be the starter and they were going to let him roll with it, it should have set up very well for him. They had a lead, you know, the run was never out of the game plan, but Burkhead just, you know, Burkhead's rushing total was like 40 yards or something. Like, it's always 40 yards. Burkhead is always going to rush for like 40, 45 yards. It was basically the stat line that should like be named in his honor. But 8 targets in this thing, 19 touches. It's really hard to argue with that. Not spectacular, but he is the most likely back to find his way to the end zone. He's certainly the most likely to back to catch 4 or 5 balls. And then Kenyon Drake was also, this is kind of a gross line, had one catch that kind of bailed out his yardage total, right? He finishes with 46 total yards, played 33 snaps. He is, you know, they like him more than Mike Davis. We learned that. It wasn't a particularly exciting rushing performance. Can't wait to see J.K. Dobbins on the field. I'd have Rex Burkhead a little bit higher than Kenyon Drake.
Yeah, I agree with you. If you have to start a Baltimore running back, your team is
in a non-bye week.
Yeah. Your team's in a tough spot here. So somebody will be doing Baltimore running backs on the waiver wires, trying to, you know, sneak them in there starts. I mean, the Denver Broncos defense probably is going to be pretty good. Somebody's going to do it. It's not going to be me. All right, let's move to wide receivers. These guys are fun. Okay, starting with Curtis Samuel. Andy, Curtis Samuel is back. 11 targets, a bunch of touches, too. He got some rushing work. Dude, Curtis Samuel. Andy, you start because I could go on for an hour.
No, it's best that I start because you're a noted Curtis Samuel apologist, noted Curtis Samuel hype man. I don't know that
I would say correct
seriously.
I would say correctest.
It's fair. He was electric. He looked fantastic. This was the version of Curtis Samuel that Washington thought they were getting last year. This was the version of Curtis Samuel that was so dynamic toward the end in Carolina. He was great. 11 targets, 12 touches. He didn't play as many snaps necessarily as the other guys, right? Like, he wasn't on the field as often as McLaurin, but when he was on the field, they got him the football. Right. He was clowning people. This was really fun. Obviously scored the short touchdown where it just would have been impossible for anybody in single coverage to hang with him. Great play. He looked really good. Like, Curtis Samuel, when healthy, is a near star level player. Like, he's not a wide receiver one, obviously, but this is somebody that needs to start for fantasy managers moving forward. I can't believe there's not someone in even a 10 team league that can't use Curtis Samuel right now. I think he's, you know, all positions thrown into the mix. I think Curtis Samuel's the most interesting player on the waiver wire this week.
Yes. Listen, we can group Jahan Dotson in here too, because like, the reality is, Andy, like, these guys are just good. Like, this receiver core is really, really good. Couple notes on Curtis Samuel. You're right. He did run the third most routes, 36 routes compared to Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson, who are at 42 and 40. He was the primary slot receiver. He was on the field out wide on only 23% of his snaps, whereas, you know, McLaurin and Jahan Dotson, like, that's the X and the flanker there. So he does have a pretty, you know, he's got a pretty good role there as like a layup receiver. So I'm gassed up about Curtis Samuel, and I'm really gassed up about Jahan Dotson too. And I know it's a Carson Wentz offense, but like, week one was sort of the Carson Wentz experience where he made some big plays to these guys down the field. He definitely had some like bro, Carson, what are you doing? I mean, Trayvon Walker was also a menace in that game. That he looks like he's going to be a pretty good player for the Jags, despite what you think about whether he should have gone number one overall. This receiver core is just good, man. Like, if you need some help at receiver, Jahan Dotson available, Curtis Samuel even more available. I agree with you, man. Like, there are teams that need a Curtis Samuel guy out there because they're clearly going to try to scheme him the ball. They tried to get it to him early and often. And, man, I'm just really high on – I'm happy for Curtis Samuel, too, honestly, because I think he's gotten like a – you know how it is in fantasy, like, oh, Curtis Samuel again. It's like, well, he barely played last year. He was hurt all last year. And maybe he should have just gotten surgery and rehabbed that groin earlier, but that's not, it's just that, that's just, that stuff happens. Like he's a good player.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I agree with you on Jahan Dotson too. I shouldn't short sell him. Caught a couple of touchdown passes. One of them was like a magnificent catch, right? Like one of them was a contested catch gem. He was fantastic. I don't think you can put yourself in a position where you're starting to Washington. Like I wouldn't go there. Yeah. I wouldn't put myself in a spot where, like, you know, if I've already got McLaurin, I'm probably going to let somebody else have these guys on the wire. Cause I just don't want to be faced with like, am I really going to start Terry McLaurin and Curtis Samuel or McLaurin and Dotson in the same week and put it all on Wentz? That might work out against a team like obviously the Jacksonville last week, Detroit coming up, but that's not going to work out very often. So I wouldn't want to do that, but Dotson looked great as well.
Yeah. Does the fact that Terry McLaurin had the lowest target percentage of these three, does that bother you at all with Terry McLaurin? I mean, for me, it's just like, I don't think Antonio Gibson's going to be getting like, you know, what do you have? Like eight targets. Yeah, he had eight targets yesterday. Like, that's not going to happen very often.
Yeah, that is not going to happen.
These three receivers.
That is not going to happen week in and week out. We know that Terry McLaurin is really good at football. Terry McLaurin's going to have plenty of weeks. Like, Terry McLaurin is not. If you think Terry McLaurin is like a fantasy problem, then you've got a pretty awesome roster right now.
I like the way you think about that. Just update as we're recording this, Adam Schefter tweeted out, test today on Steelers running back Najee Harris's foot injury came back negative. And there is a belief that, according to a source, he, quote, should be good to go for Sunday against the Patriots. So we were already kind of like on Jalen Warren. I think he's definitely still a guy to pick up and add, but do not, you know, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see about the whole Najee Harris thing. That is
really a best case scenario because he was hurting. It is still the same leg that he hurt in the preseason. He's facing the same headwinds that we talked about with Warren. It's great news. I hope that ends up being the case. He seems like, I mean, if you leave the stadium in a boot, that's a bit of a concern. It seems like a guy that could maybe use a week off, but they certainly need his talent. So that's great news.
Yeah, I still think that you speculatively pick up Jalen Warren, you add him and kind of see what happens pretty much.
Yeah.
Let's move to some of these other non-Washington receivers. Jarvis Landry, I was impressed with Landry's role. They got him working downfield a little bit. And, you know, he's definitely a guy that might be a little – Chris Olave is going to have some big weeks. But, you know, where Jarvis Landry wins on the field and where Chris Olave wins on the field, like, are pretty different. So I think Landry does make for an interesting add.
Yeah, it remains to be seen what the Saints' game plans are actually going to be, right? Like, they threw the ball, I think, 34 times against Atlanta. A lot of that was being in comeback mode. I don't know that they don't want to be a team that just puts the ball in the air like 24 or 25 times, but whenever they throw 35 times, Jarvis Landry is going to see eight or nine targets. I mean, he's a really good player. That 40-yard catch he had on the final drive was, I don't know how that happened. Like, I really don't know how that happened. It was a phenomenal play. It was a phenomenal grab. Like, he's just a really good football player. It was weird that he had become sort of the forgotten man in this offense because this guy's had a career. Like, this guy has 60, I think he has six different 80 catch seasons, obviously been to the Pro Bowl a bunch. He's led the league in receptions before. He is a legendary Pro Bowl skills challenge dodgeball player. That right there should tip it in for you. But he was the guy that we didn't draft in this receiving corps, which is just weird. I mean, I understand.
Weird, yeah.
I understand why we're on Thomas. I understand why we're on Olave. I can even understand questioning whether they could support a third receiver, but Jarvis Landry's really good. And everywhere he goes, he draws targets.
Yeah. And last year was clearly hampered by injury. And I think this just comes back to Jameis. Like, if Jameis is really good and he continues to show with his play that he can, like, more and more could be put on his plate. Like, he can absolutely run the type of offense that we care about three receivers here. And it just depends, like, how much. But I do think that Landry's a guy that should be added. These next four guys, like, well, let's do these two together. DJ Chark and Robbie Anderson. Like, we should have known that these guys were going to walk into, and I feel like we talked about it a little bit, like, that these guys are probably going to walk into starting jobs, at least early in the season for DJ Chark, while Jameson Williams is not out there. Like, they're mercurial talents. They've had up and down moments, but, like, they certainly can play. Like, they can put up big plays. And it clearly showed in week one that these guys are the number two receivers on their team.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chark scores a touchdown, finishes with eight targets, goes over 50 yards, basically looked like the guy that we saw in, I think it was 2019, where he was a wide receiver one most of the season, picked up an ankle injury toward the end of the year. But DJ Chark, like, when he's healthy, and I can, like, we can forgive the Urban Meyer year, right? Like, when DJ Chark is healthy, that's a guy with 4.3 speed. He's got size. That's a good player. So, and an excellent compliment to Amon Ross St. Brown. So I think DJ Chark is a guy that we're going to be flexing a fair amount. And you know what you're getting with Robbie Anderson, right? Like, that would not have been a particularly interesting stat line had it not been for the one huge splash play where he broke loose. But, like, that's Robbie Anderson's game. He can do that. He can do that six times a year, and you're going to get big weeks whenever it happens. So I happen to like to have, like, a third receiver or a flex who has that sort of potential. So sort of a classic Robbie Anderson game. Would it be a surprise if next week he goes 3 for 33 and no touchdowns? Of course. Like, absolutely, that's part of Robbie Anderson's game too. But when he, you know, he's going to hit on big plays a half dozen times throughout the year. And that's going to, that makes him a real difference maker.
And I still think this Giants defense, which they get in week two, is worth testing. I think that DJ Chark against Washington, like, these are the weeks that you probably want to use these type of receivers. And I think they fit in the same archetype. Devin Duvernay maybe could be that type of player. But I'm also, like, looking at him as the clear cut, like, Kevin Ogletree of this year, right? Like, we know the guy that comes out in week one, scores two touchdowns on, like, four targets, and then we just never hear from him again. Maybe I'm wrong, but he did run 18 routes to 32 for Mark Andrews and 25 for Rashad Bateman. Interesting that Bateman was, you know, didn't run the same amount of routes as, like, it wasn't like a 90%+ route participation guy, but was still the clear dog in the wide receiver room, and then everybody else kind of mixed in.
Duvernay had the exact stat line that I would have bet on Sammy Watkins having, right? Like, the low target total, huge breakout performer in week one. And maybe we don't hear from him again this season. It is almost certain that, like, it's a 2-touchdown game, so it could very well be the best game that he has this year. I think he's interesting because we've been, you know, we've been mulling over, like, who's going to be the number three receiver on the Ravens. And it's entirely possible that the Ravens don't produce, like, a third pass catcher that we have to start or that we have to roster in fantasy. But it, you know, and you and I had discussed the possibility that it would be Isaiah Likely. He saw a bunch of targets, like, I think 4 targets in this game, didn't catch any of them. Duvernay was great. And I also feel like some of the low target total might just be the game situation, right? They were not facing a particularly competitive opponent, didn't need to put the ball in the air 50 times. Not that they're ever going to put the ball in the air 50 times, but like, if you're in a league in which a third Ravens receiver can get interesting, it's probably Duvernay. I think you're right, though. Like, generally speaking, when you're looking at the waiver wire, you want to be following targets perhaps more than you're chasing touchdowns, right? Like, obviously he's not going to be a guy who just scores week in and week out. He doesn't profile as a classic, you know, red zone goal to go receiver or anything like that. But it's a great week, and he might just be the Ravens number three.
Yeah, he's at least worth adding if you play in deeper leagues, and, you know, keep an eye on the usage for week two. Last guy here at wide receiver before we move on, Josh Palmer. They play Kansas City on Thursday night this week. I'm at this point betting that Keenan Allen is not going to play. Andy, the notion on Palmer coming into this year was he was the wide receiver insurance guy to have coming into this season, because when Keenan Allen went down last year, you know, he had a pretty good game. He moved into, like, that Keenan Allen role. That's not really what happened in the last game. Like, he mostly stuck to the outside, where DeAndre Carter, who we're going to pick Austin Eckler's brain about DeAndre Carter on Eckler's edge this week. So obviously come back for that. We're going to get a ton of insight from him on this whole Chargers situation. But DeAndre Carter was the guy who was the slot receiver. 71% of his routes came out of the slot when Keenan Allen went down. Like, Keenan Allen was ripping the Raiders up in that game. He was going to have a monster game. But then Carter just kind of picked up where Keenan Allen left off. So, I don't know. I'm a little like, I definitely think Palmer's worth adding, but I don't think he's like I'm probably not starting him on Thursday night.
Yeah, that's why I buried him underneath, you know, two Washington receivers and Landry and all these other guys. I don't think he's a sure thing. In fact, like every Chargers receiver saw four targets basically against the Raiders, right? Like it's a bit of a nightmare of a box score to go through. Keenan Allen was pretty clearly going to see 10, 11 targets in that game. But everybody else, like this might end up being an offense where the right way to invest in it was Justin Herbert and Austin Eckler. And it's going to be a different receiver each week other than Keenan. When Keenan gets back, he's obviously going to see a ton of targets. He's been a 100 catch receiver forever. And it doesn't seem like that's a dire situation. So there's just almost no way that he's going to be able to turn around and get back on the field for a Thursday nighter. But doesn't seem like it's going to be too long. So yeah, I fundamentally agree with you. We're going to see a whole bunch. And Justin Herbert has been like, I feel like all season last year, Justin Herbert would just like make up a guy from scraps who scored a long touchdown like week in and week out. He's just really good. He can put the ball anywhere on the field that he wants to. And he's obviously going to distribute the ball to everybody in his receiving core. Everybody plays a few snaps. It might be a little frustrating. Palmer did really have a big week. Yeah, he had the 5-catch, 66-yard, 1 touchdown week last year in the only game that Keenan missed. I think he's interesting. And it's the type of offense that, you know, if we're talking about a flex, if we're talking about a wide receiver three, maybe take a shot with the Chargers offense because they're probably going to average 32, 35 points per game this year.
Tell you what, Andy, Dalton has been running, you know, with his shirt off victory lap since the Thursday night opener with Gabe Davis, but you were definitely about to be able to trip him mid lap and posterize him with the Keenan Allen. You know, you had him top 10, Dalton had him at like wide receiver, I don't know, 55, cause he's 30 years old. I'm kidding. I know he didn't have that low, but like Keenan Allen was about to smash in that game. It's a shame that he got hurt, but yeah, we were pretty much lockstep there with Josh Palmer. Andy and I are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about yet another Chargers player. All right, we're back. First on your tight end list here, Andy, it's Gerald Everett. And man, I mean, I'm going to have Austin Eckler run his first fantasy analyst victory lap here because him and Justin Herbert would not stop talking about Gerald Everett on the first episode of Eckler's Edge. And what do you know? Gerald Everett comes out. He doesn't only get four targets, but played a ton and scored a touchdown and like looked pretty good too.
Gerald Everett's a weird player because I feel like teammates always rave about him and then he's on a different roster the next year. that happens to him a lot. I thought he was a really good college player too.
Do you know who Gerald Everett's kind of starting to remind me of? The guy that he replaced in LA.
Oh, Jared Cook. Yeah, absolutely. Jared Cook. Jared Cook, what a wild career. He was like for the first 5 years of his career, he would always finish strong in December. Like he might be the only guy who's ever been like a fantasy sleeper for like 4 or 5 years running. It was really incredible. And Gerald Everett has a little bit of that because he always gets some buzz in camp and teammates always love him. Super fun play on which he scored the touchdown. He backpedals into the end zone. He's really good. He's a really good athlete. He is, of course, mired in this situation where literally everybody on that team got four targets against the Raiders. So it's not going to be a sure thing. I don't think there's a sure thing at tight end out there. I will caution people on, I feel like we need to mention OJ Howard. I didn't even put him on the list, but I feel like we need to mention OJ Howard because he caught two balls. Both of them were touchdowns. At least one of them, just a walk-in touchdown. He also played 12 snaps. And like, I care about playing time. And we talked about this with Duvernay and the notion of chasing touchdowns. I mean, I don't want to just purely chase touchdowns with OJ Howard. He barely played in that game. Yes, when he got on the field, he scored. That's great. But that's not generally the kind of line that I'm going to chase after.
Yeah, I feel you. By the way, Jared Cook, his first season was 2009. That was my freshman year of college. Jared Cook is... Wow, what a life Jared Cook has had. It does seem like it's finally over here in the NFL for Jared Cook. But Gerald Everett taking over as the new Jared Cook. I like your notes about OJ Howard. we need to see his role grow before, but I'm at least keeping him on like waiver wire speed dial that like if the next, because the Texans are looking for guys to step up, right? Like if he comes out there and he's suddenly like a 70% snap player or like running a ton or a ton more routes, like I'll be totally ready to pick him up. Cause it's a little weird that like Brandon Bean rarely ever misses. And they were so willing to just like cut OJ Howard with a guaranteed contract. But I mean, shoot, the Texans need people. OJ Howard, I think, does have skills. And I was interested at least that the broadcast while that game popped up did mention that like Lovie Smith specifically recruited OJ Howard. And like there's some connective Tampa Bay tissue there. They weren't there at the same time, but like, you know, he knows some guys that coached him, stuff like that. So I don't know. It's worth keeping an eye on, but I'm with you for now. The other two guys here, they're like kind of they're back from ACL tears. Logan Thomas, Robert Tonyan. Logan Thomas looked the pride of Lynchburg, Virginia. I'm happy to see him out there. I'm kind of surprised that he was out there actually as early as he is. And again, we're really talking about a lot of Washington pass catchers here. But it is at least worth mentioning that, you know, we know he's a good fantasy tight end when he's healthy.
Yeah, so a couple things with Logan Thomas. I wanted to give you the opportunity to call him the pride of Lynchburg, Virginia. I thought that was important.
Thank you,
appreciate that. Also, yeah. I'm just like, he's one of those stories from week one that just sort of wowed me because I did not expect him to play. I thought he was going to miss several weeks. Like he's coming back from ACL, MCL, meniscus surgery, seemed pretty serious at the time. He was not in my plans at all. I did not think he was going to play early in the season. Played 48 snaps, saw six targets. Not that he made a ton of fantasy noise or anything like that. He caught three of them. But this is a guy who's going to have some weeks. And the fact that he was apparently not on any sort of snap count coming off of that, I thought was really impressive. There's just a handful of comeback stories in week one. James Robinson was another that really wowed me and where I just did not expect those guys to be able to make it onto the field, and they did. So that was something to see. The only reason that Tonyan is on this list is that the man has like an 11 touchdown season on his resume, and he's one of the few receivers that Aaron Rodgers can pick out of a lineup on that roster right now.
He ran a route on 47% of Aaron Rodgers' dropbacks. He also lined up at like legit receiver a lot, 45 yeah. According to PFF, 45.5% of his snaps are in the slot, 27.3% he was lined up out wide. Andy's dog is a big Robert Tonyan fan, so
huge,
I mean,
huge
we're
Tonyan fan. My dog is trying to say baby Kittle. That's what she's trying to say.
Yeah. Well, we got with Leonard Fournette, Robert Tonyan. We know what is your dog's name, Andy? I don't even know.
Izzy. Izzy is my dog.
Izzy she's is ancient. She's big Fournette fan. Big. How old is she?
She's almost 15. It's astonishing that she's actually reacting to this at all, because she hasn't really been able to hear anything that we've said for the last year or so. But she hears Tonyan and she reacts.
There you go. Well, both my dogs are in here and they've been asleep for the last hour, so they couldn't give two shits about. As much as I'm trying to hype up all these Washington players, hello, Charlie is literally from the area. Wake up, pal. I got nothing from either one of them. All right. Let's move into some of our special segments here as we close out the podcast. This one I'm titling Getting In Early, which is basically like, who are the guys, Andy, that folks should be adding that aren't going to pop in, you know, the ESPN, NFL.com waiver wire articles, or even Andy Behrens's big time waiver wire article on Yahoo, but the best waiver wire column, by the way, Andy Behrens. But they're not going to pop in those. Like, they're not the ads this week, but they could eventually help folks down the line. And if you have a stash spot, maybe consider these guys.
Yeah, at some point this season, James Conner is going to limp off the field, right? Like, no disrespect to James Conner, no reference to his durability or anything like that. It's just a hard position. Almost no running backs are going to make it through the season unscathed. At some point, he's going to limp off the field, and I thought we learned pretty clearly that Eno Benjamin is the number two there. We didn't even see Darrell Williams. There was no Darrell Williams. It was Eno Benjamin, a little bit. You know, little bit of it was almost the whole game was in garbage time, right? Kansas City just lit him up. But I think Eno Benjamin is the very clear number two there. Had a little bit of buzz in the preseason. And I don't like, nobody's going to be fighting you for him on the waiver wire this week, because it's going to be Jeff Wilson. It's going to be Herbert. It's going to be people really interested in Warren. I just don't think there's going to be, you know, maybe people will make, Benjamin like a fifth option in waiver claims, but I don't think anybody's going to be fighting you for him. But there is going to come a week where we, if we don't lead the show with Eno Benjamin, we're going to be talking about him really early, because you know, you should expect that almost every running back in the game is going to get dinged at some point. And we're going to be talking about a James Conner injury, and Eno Benjamin is clearly going to be the guy to pick up. And then we also mentioned Rashad White earlier. I thought he was obviously the very clear backup to Leonard Fournette. No Gio Bernard in that one. No Vaughn in that one, right? Like, that is pretty clearly going to be Rashad White's role. He'll just come right in, and he'll step into the touches that Fournette was getting. Not that he's the exact same player. I thought he was a really exciting receiver in college, right? Like, some of my favorite highlights, some of my favorite at least pass catching highlights, almost regardless of the position, coming into the league this year, were Rashad White. So that guy's pretty gifted. He's rostered in about 40% of leagues right now, so he might not be out there in yours. He was a popular sleeper, but if he is, he's not going to be a guy whose name is at the top of the, man, my dog, here's Lenny Fournette again, and she's like, woof, woof.
I was going to say, what's Izzy's scouting report on Rashad White?
She doesn't want to hear this. She's like, Leonard Fournette is an Iron Man. He's never going down. But White is pretty clearly a guy who is going to have a huge role, and it's going to be a really profitable role when he steps into it eventually.
100% agree. Yeah, those are two great names. And like, the backup running backs on offenses we expect to score a shitload of points, like, yeah, those are the ones that we're going to try to tell you to get in early on. I think we got a lot of clarity on both of those guys that they are the clear-cut RB2s. All right, Andy, what goes up must come down. If we're going to add all of these guys to our rosters, we do have to give the people some folks to drop. I will offer up my nominations, but you go first here with the guy or guys that folks should consider dropping, or definitely just get them the hell off the roster.
Yeah, I wouldn't. And, you know, we talked about the tight end position this week as one where, other than Gerald Everett, I don't think anybody really popped necessarily. I'm not super excited about OJ Howard just yet, but you got to get Mike Gesicki off your rosters. He's clearly not a system fit. Like, I don't think the new coaching staff has any use for a tight end who can't play in line, doesn't play in line. Like, he's basically purely a slot receiver, and their actual wide receivers are so much better than Mike Gesicki. He saw like one target. I don't think it's going to get much better than that. I think he's in for a lot of weeks where he catches one pass, two passes. He was surely a trade candidate for that team. I'm sure that gets tied to his contract. Maybe it's a contract that can't be moved. I don't know. He has no role on this team. Like, he's no kind of blocker. Played behind Dustin Smythe. I just don't think he's going to play that often.
Show Mr. Smythe a little respect.
Durham Smythe. You're right. My bad.
Dude, Seathan Carter even like got hurt in this game, and Durham Smythe, the aforementioned Durham Dustin Smythe, dropped a pass in this game, and like
Dusty,
Mike Gesicki still,
Smythe.
Yeah, Dusty Smythe still couldn't even get any, like, Mike Gesicki couldn't even get any burn after those guys were like getting hurt or messing up or whatever. So yeah, I mean, Gesicki is like, let it go. Jerry should be on the blower with the Dolphins right now, trying to get Mike Gesicki on his roster. What a disaster. What a disaster, the Dallas Cowboys. But all right, I'll offer up a couple of drop candidates here, Andy. They're all in the AFC East. Well, let me actually say this. I don't know if I for sure want you to drop everybody on these two receiver cores. Like, I like Jacoby Myers is a good player, man, by the way. Like, he looked pretty good against the Dolphins in this game. But, man, I've got a bit of an itchy trigger finger when it comes to dropping any Patriots receiver, and honestly, any Titans receiver either. I mean, the legend of Kyle Phillips does continue to grow.
Kyle Phillips saw nine targets.
I know. I'm a little less like, but I'm talking about like a guy like Robert Woods, who is, you know, widely rostered and all that stuff. Like, but if you're really hurting and like Woods is the guy that you're looking at, like, I might consider just saying goodbye to Woods. I mean, if Kyle Phillips, who is probably never going to help you in fantasy, like, if you have to start Kyle Phillips, your team is probably really screwed. And, you know, Burks is still running as the wide receiver 4. That'll change at some point. I get it. But, like, how long can you really wait on that? Like, these two receiver cores in general, Patriots, I mean, Devontae Parker, enough already. Like, Kendrick Bourne is, we've fallen way out of favor there. I'm at least considering, like, if you need to add somebody, those are two receiver cores I'd look at in totality.
Yeah, I agree. I can't really fight for any member of the Patriots receiving core at all. You're What are the odds that Mac Jones gives us games with, you know, 330 and three touchdowns? We're just not going to get a lot of that. It's not going to be some sort of high yield passing attack. So I get it. And it should go without, like, Robert Woods is a tough one because he's a good brand name, easy story to root for. But would I rather have Curtis Samuel right now than Robert Woods? Hell yeah. I absolutely
would. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's just like offensive ecosystems, and I'm not really trying to invest in that Titans offensive ecosystem, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they have a good game, and you know, next week, and I look like an idiot, but I do think that's worth considering. And James Cook, too, if we were talking about like a tough cut at running back, like I definitely think that there's a scenario, there's a universe where you cut James Cook after week one, because it's clear that Buffalo is going to be three backs.
Yeah.
And he fumbled in the first game. We know that. Like, there's a universe where you cut him after week one and he comes back to bite you, and, you know, some other team that wins the championship has him on their roster and you hate yourself for it. But I don't know. He's a guy that I would, if you needed to add like a hot waiver wire running back, like a Jeff Wilson type, I'd cut James Cook for Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, fully agree with that. We saw a whole bunch of rookies who had almost no role in week one. Zamir White, no role. Tyler Algier, not even active. Whole bunch of guys that I'd be willing to kick to the curb, and James Cook is probably there. I probably should have seen Zach Moss coming. I'm a longtime Zach Moss supporter, but the whole starting the season not even active last year was a worry. He seemed like he was entirely absent from their plans until a pretty good camp this year. But Zach Moss was a real factor, a real complicating factor. And the thing with James Cook is, like, his ceiling was never featured running back for the Buffalo Bills. His ceiling right. was always guy who catches 45 passes this year, 50 passes this year. He's like the receiving down back and not somebody that they're going to give even 100 carries to. So if he's not even in line for that, I don't know why you're holding.
Yeah, ceiling was like JD McKissick, the guy that they tried to sign to actually get this role, and that didn't happen. And it's just like, yeah, it's I don't think he's ever going to turn into that, but maybe I'm wrong. On the inverse, Andy, this segment we're going to do every single week, hold on loosely. These are the guys that are like, hey, man, we don't want you giving up on these folks yet. Like, hold on to them a little bit here. Who are you? You've got a couple of candidates here. I've got three. Who are the guys you're telling folks, like, I know you're pissed. I know, especially week one, man, people get so irritated when the thing that they thought was going to happen all summer doesn't come to fruition. Who are the guys that people need to have a little patience for?
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a couple weeks with George Pickens, because he was, I mean, this is such a talented player. He's got speed, he's got size, he's got all of it. Rarely came off the field for Pittsburgh, so he's playing, he's running routes. We don't have to worry about that. This isn't a guy who's like fighting for playing time necessarily. He's got the Trubisky problem. He's got the you know, Pittsburgh offensive struggles problem. Like, that's all part of his story. It's a concern. Only saw three targets in the opener. I was expecting more, but man, this is a really talented player. Talked about it throughout the offseason. You know, when Pittsburgh sort of reaches on a receiver, you should maintain an interest. So I think there's going to be good George Pickens weeks down the road. I'm not panicking just yet. I'm close, not panicking just yet. I would be really concerned, and there are some dynasty formats in which I have Devontae Smith, and I am I'm worried because I don't know that Jalen Hurts is a really fun fantasy quarterback. I don't know that Jalen Hurts is going to support three pass catchers over the course of the full season. I mean, the guy had a great fantasy year last year while throwing 16 touchdown passes. AJ Brown was dominant in week one, and Hurts was constantly looking his way. That's going to be a thing all year, no question about it. There was a pretty steady drumbeat all summer of wow, that, like, Dallas Goedert is a thing, and Dallas Goedert was a bit of a thing in week one. I don't think it goes beyond Goddard and Brown. I don't know that we're going to see very many Devontae Smith big weeks. It was, you know, only a four target game for him, came away with nothing. I'd be worried.
I would definitely be worried. Hopefully you drafted him as like your wide receiver four.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully that he didn't go. I had him, what, like 38, 39 was kind of where I ranked him all offseason. The good news for Smith, though, and the reason that I think you should not drop him, is the Eagles were like about 14th, 15th in neutral pass rate in week one. So they definitely weren't just like the, you know, run it down your throat offense that they were last year, which is good. That like Smith's going to have some big weeks. I do think they will be really, really difficult to predict. So he's a guy that I definitely think you should hold on to. By the way, like AJ Brown, I mean, knock on all the wood, that got the dog's attention. Knock on all the wood, AJ Brown, you know, is a guy that has had injury problems, and like if he ever went down, then we're probably starting Smith in fantasy every single week. And with your Pickens thing, I don't know. I'm a little more like Curtis Samuel, Jarvis Landry, Jahan Dotson. Like, I think I might rather have those guys than George Pickens. But the next group of guys you had on your list, like DJ Chark, Devin Duvernay, Robbie Anderson, Josh Palmer, I'd have George Pickens over those guys. My three hold on loosely candidates are two Texans. Don't go dropping Damian Pierce. I know that it was frustrating, the Rex Burkhead thing. Like, I get it, but like that's going to flip at some point. Okay. Like, I don't know how long it's going to take, but at some point the roles will flip. Cause Burkhead just, he's just not that good. And he's Damian Pierce is clearly a guy they are really excited about. So disappointing. I don't think you can start Damian Pierce. You got to stick him on your bench until you actually see the switch happen, but it is going to happen at some point. So hold on loosely to Damian Pierce. Nico Collins as well. The routes were there. The targets weren't there, but you know, again, this is a guy you drafted to be like your wide receiver five. I certainly think I'd still rather have Nico Collins than all of the wide receivers we listed here on the waiver wire pickup. And my last guy is also David Njoku. The snaps were there. He was on the field a ton. I know Kevin Stefanski praised him for his damn blocking. And you know, I know that fantasy managers hate when their tight ends block, but he's going to be on the field a ton. And maybe he doesn't reach, you know, tight end one ceiling, but you know, that was kind of an aggressive jump anyways. I would hold on to David Njoku.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that. Like OJ Howard scoring two touchdowns for the Texans and Nico Collins not finding the end zone was a little bit triggering for me because I'm just a longtime fan of Collins. That's another guy that I wouldn't drop. And I think you drew the line at the right place. Like if I'm in a shallow league and Samuel is out there, I definitely want Samuel. I want Landry. I want Dotson over him, but probably not the rest of those guys.
Yeah, 100%. I think we're on the same page here. All right, Andy. That was awesome. We covered a ton of guys. Anything else from you before we get out of here?
Nothing from me. Nothing from my. I think my dog is done. I think my dog has said her piece. Wants you to keep riding Leonard Fournette for the rest of the season. Big Bob Tonyan fan, but I think those are her only hard stances.
Hey, Izzy came through with some big recommendations. I'm definitely after this pod, I'm going to go check out my rankings and make sure Bob Tonyan is like fringe tight end 10 for me this coming week. He's going to score two touchdowns against the Bears in that hammer drop that we talked about to start the show. So that's what Izzy is trying to forecast here. She's giving her, we don't do our fearless forecast as much anymore. She's giving a fearless forecast like, hey, dad, prepare to get upset about Bob Tonyan getting two touchdowns against the damn Bears.
She might very well be right.
Yeah, she's probably right. All right, that is going to do it for us. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens. You can follow me at Matt Harmon _BYB. And while you're there, go check out how much fun the at Yahoo Fantasy account is having this season. Trevor, I mean, the guy's just running on a heater there. If you like the show, how the hell could you not like the show? We just gave you so many waiver options to pick from. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. I will be back tomorrow with Chargers running back Austin Eckler. And we definitely didn't record it before this one. And it's definitely going to be a great episode, though. I just have a feeling in the air for a new episode of Eckler's Edge tomorrow. Until then, we are out.